Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back.
Ian Happ.
Happ drives one in the air. Left center field. It's got a chance. Grand slam. Grand slam, Ian Happ.
Outfielder for your Chicago Cubs.
This is trouble back toward the wall as Happ on the track makes the catch. Very good play by Ian Happ. That was not a routine play.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
This week we have Jake Johnson, probably most notable as Nick Miller from New Girl. So let's be cops. Big Cubs fan. On New Girl, when you have the Rizzo jersey on your bedroom wall, I just want to know what it's going to take for me to get a jersey on a wall in one of the shows.
Next gig, I have that opportunity. I'll do it. I was on social media one day and I saw that John Lester was following me. Well, I like DM'd him like a 9-year-old. Excuse me, Mr. Lester, I'm a huge fan. And he wrote back, like, sounds good, bud. We should get a beer.
Ian Happ, every Thursday on the Dan Bernstein Show on 670 The Score.
Welcome back.
Ian Happ is on Twitter at IHAP_1. He's with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. That was a really fun addition, and that's become sort of a Wednesday thing for me. Is my cardio workout is usually the background music is the Compound Podcast. What a great guest Jake Johnson is. I mean, just honest and upfront and giving, and he was asking questions of you guys. That was really fun stuff, Ian.
Yeah, it was so fun to have him on, not only because I'm a huge fan and have watched New Girl for a while, but also because he's just genuinely a really cool Cubs fan. Like, he wanted to know a bunch of specific stuff about us, about the team, about our careers, and to have someone who's had that much success and really doesn't need to ask us questions, but genuinely had the interest was so cool.
And I kept thinking about the stuff as he was asking questions about minor league life, and that everybody else was talking about how brutal the travel is and how difficult it can be. And I'm thinking, it's one thing to wonder about is Major League Baseball coming back, but like when you talk to Zach and Dakota and some of these guys that might have been slated to be elsewhere than Chicago, it's 10 times scarier to think about what's going on with the minors. Do we know when minor league baseball might ever come back?
I think some of that stuff is going to be decided in the next couple weeks as the major league season gets worked out. But you're right. It's a really scary time for any minor league player who their job security is really uncertain, even compared to ours. So, I feel for those guys. I can't imagine if it was 2015 or 2016 for me, coming out of college, getting drafted, and coming up to the minors, not have a season to kind of lose out on that development is terrifying.
It's been making me a little angry to see some of these national columnists who have the ear of ownership quoting some sources who won't go on the record, who are apparently MLB lawyers, about what's going on right now, that there may be some lack of ethics as they approach whatever this negotiation may be. Do you know if we can dial down any of the bad blood between the owners of the Players Association right now and see if something can be worked out without brinksmanship and really in a spirit of good faith that already has now been breached?
Yeah, that's in our basic agreement is to work in good faith. And it's something that I think we we as players really we want that to be the case. We want to do this together, and we want to do it for the fans. We want to do it for the country, and we want to bring baseball back. That's our goal. So I hope and I pray that we can continue to work towards an agreement, and that we can do it in an ethical and fair way. Because you're right, what's happening right now in our game, it's not pretty. I don't think it's what the players, the owners, or the fans want right now. I think there's enough going on in the world that if we can work together and try to bring back something to the best of our ability, and really just to highlight what this game is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about sportsmanship. It's supposed to be about entertaining people across the country and across the world. So I think we owe it to everyone.
Yeah, there's a lot of water being carried on behalf of the owners now by some very prominent baseball writers who I wish had a little bit more, a little greater understanding for how difficult it is to ask the players going into a collective bargaining negotiation to essentially give some things away that they don't have to give away. I'm talking about you and your union is really under pressure here, and you haven't taken the bait to push back publicly. So I think one side of this has been a little bit more professional and adult than the other, but that's my opinion.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think that it's our job to make sure that we do our best to negotiate behind closed doors, to work and come to an agreement, and then present that to the fans, to everyone. And as soon as we receive some of these proposals that have been said that they're coming, we'll do our diligence to make sure that we put our work in and get the best product out on the field.
So I have in my compound notes here, I'm reading my own notes, and I have Last Dance, Live Golf, and Decapitated Bird.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of an issue with the windows or doors where there's a lot of birds here. There's some trees, and there's a ton of birds flying around. And it's about once every other week where a bird will just come flying into the door or the window, and then it's sitting outside. So the other day, a bird comes, it flies into the window, leaves a huge mark, and it's sprawled out on the back patio here. And none of my roommates will touch it or pick it up. So when I get back, it has since lost its head to another creature. And oh. Mother Nature was taking care of it. And so I had to get a shovel and remove it because none of my roommates would. But that was the story of the decapitated bird.
What was it, a bird of prey, or was it like a coyote or something?
Well, we think it was probably another bird that had come and savagely taken one of its friend's heads. But
wow.
No one actually saw the process, but we did see some other birds swooping down and picking at it. And so we got that removed from the back patio because you don't want to be looking at that all day. Actually, Zach was a little bit upset at me because he was just enjoying looking out the window and watching nature. But I thought, you know what, let's not do that. Let's get rid of it. I didn't want like a family of raccoons to end up at night just hanging out next to the door.
Right. I mean, I'm a big bird guy, and I'm getting close to getting a bird feeder here just for the entertainment value of it. And I don't know if you saw the picture, if you follow Len Casper on Twitter. Len and his wife have sort of an elaborate bird feeder in their backyard. They've got the regular seed with a squirrel guard on it, and then there's a sock thistle feeder for certain finches. And I swear to you, he posted this picture, and all it said was AL East matchup. And on the feeder at the same time were a Baltimore Oriole and a Blue Jay. So it was pretty
fantastic.
Sweet.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, that is fantastic. We have a couple hummingbird feeders around here, and I'm fascinated by hummingbirds. So to see those things just basically hover and get some of the hummingbird food is really cool.
So you guys were all glued to the television, not just for The Last Dance, but I mean, I think I was too. I was among those who really enjoyed watching the live golf, watching the two-on-two, because it got exciting, and that course is fascinating. Everybody's talked about Seminole for years, and that's the first time I've ever gotten to look at it. So that was entertaining sports on television.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with Seminole. I've never played it, but just the aura of it and how famous it is. And I was very surprised that they would let cameras out there, and just it's so exclusive. But to be able to get a look at that track and see how beautiful it is out there, and then just to watch these guys play, I mean, live golf and watching them play. And I always think it's funny when you go through an event like this where you're watching every shot that four guys hit, and even sitting in a room with professional athletes, like, what are these guys doing? Oh, my God, it's terrible. When you watch a normal PGA Tour event, 99% of the shots you see are the best shots of the day, because they're not going to cut to a guy shanking one or hitting one 10 yards offline. Every single shot is next to the pin. It's made putts. It drives right down the middle. So to be able to see every single shot these guys play and see that it's a hard game. It's not always perfect. I mean, they get up and down and they still shoot very low scores, but they don't always hit perfect shots. So I think just to be able to see that and to see really how competitive these guys can be and playing against each other, it's so much fun to watch. I'm really excited for the Tiger and Phil Mets this weekend.
Yeah, usually we have to wait for the U.S. Open to see some like sadistically prepared course to have them have the winner ideally shooting par. And we always debate that all year, that would you rather see great players tear up a course, or would you rather see great players reduced to having some of these difficulties in crazy rough and having to shape some of these shots? And I guess I'm in between. I think there's a time and a place for it. But you're right, there wasn't perfect ball striking, even as exciting as it all was.
Yeah, and that course is really difficult. And I think what people didn't realize watching it on TV is there's like a 15, you know, probably 20-mile-an-hour gust coming off the water there, because they're right on the coast. And those last couple holes that they played, and they went back to 17 to the closest to the pin, but 17 and 18, those are all right-handed players. And there's a wind from left to right coming off the water at 15 to 20 miles an hour. There's flags that are tucked into left hole locations that are impossible to get to. You're like, God, why are they hitting it in the bunker? Because those are really, really difficult golf shots.
I'd also like to know at what point Matthew Wolf was able to tell a coach, no, this is just how I swing. Don't try to change me. I love asking conversations because everything's been so homogenized now. Like, we don't see a lot of baseball players with wacky swings and crazy stances. We don't see pitchers with strange windups anymore, because everything, there's been an understanding of the right way to do things. Everything's been so standardized. Very similarly in golf, whether it's Jim Furyk's little hand lift or a swing plane that's different, this Matthew Wolf is a thing, and I don't know how he was able to stay with it as long as he has to stay this good at it.
Yeah, I'm kind of familiar with his story. So his coach, George Gankis, who is kind of got famous on Instagram as GG Swing Tips, he has this kind of funky swing that Matt Wolf has used now, and he's teaching it out of a kind of a local range in California. Now he's really blown up to be a top 100 coach and all this stuff, but it is a crazy, crazy move, and he generates some serious power. I saw some of the gambling lines out there about, you know, Ricky's going to have the long drive on these two long drive holes, and Matt Wolf was a huge underdog. He hits bombs. I mean, 360 right down the middle on both those holes, just insane.
Do you think if golfers at the PGA level had to carry their own bags for 18 regularly, and you get to Sunday, and there's been a physical toll unlike they currently have now, how that would change things, like what it would do to what it meant to be a championship golfer, to have the endurance to carry one's bag for an entire tournament?
I think it's definitely different, because one of the parts of their week that is so different is that they show up on, you know, Monday night or Tuesday. So they play Tuesday, and then they have to play the Pro-Am on Wednesday, because that's what pays for the tournament, and that's what, you know, the sponsors are paying for the charity and all that stuff. So they actually, you know, they play practice round, whether it's Monday, Tuesday, or just Tuesday, and then they have to play a full 18 holes most of the time, sometimes nine, on Wednesday. And then you have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you have potentially 6 days in a row of walking 18 holes with carrying your own bag. That is a lot of golf. And I mean, anybody who's ever walked 18 holes, and especially some of these courses they play, like I'm thinking about Oakmont and some of like the long 7,500 yards up and down hills, like that is a toll. It's a really big toll.
Talking with Ian Happ, as we do every Thursday here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, you also mentioned that you and the boys at the compound have really enjoyed watching The Last Dance. what's your takeaway from it? Is there any sports life lesson to be learned? Is there anything to be emulated? Anything to be avoided?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of lessons to be learned. I really enjoyed it. Just hearing Michael Jordan talk and seeing just some of the things that he went through his career and life. And when you look back on that time, thinking about a player in the middle of the playoffs skipping practice and a coach being okay with it and all of this stuff that would not be tolerated today. But I think watching Phil Jackson and the message that he would send to his players and the way that he coached, I've always loved his attitude towards mental health and meditation and making the guys do yoga. I've always loved that stuff. But hearing Michael Jordan talk about just his intensity and the way that he just cared so much about winning and trying to make his teammates better. I think the guys and I talked about this in baseball. It's such a game of failure that if you just jump on guys every time they don't succeed, you might beat them down enough to the point where they're not being successful at all. I think it's a little bit different just because effort and energy and being super up all the time and super aggressive in baseball doesn't always work. It's more of a sport where you're trying to be calm because everything is moving so fast around you that you're trying to really slow things down. So we talked about how that might not work in the baseball sense, but I think just the general attitude of the way that he prepared himself every day and just was preparing, thinking about being a champion, I think that that's something that we can all take away.
Yeah, I've taken it a step further when you mentioned Phil Jackson. I covered Phil, and I covered those three teams and that second three-peat and was around him every day and traveled with him. And I can say confidently that there is no Joe Maddon as we know him without there having been a Phil Jackson as we knew him, with some of the outside-the-box stuff, with okay and encouraged to have interests outside the game and to bring in aspects from beyond the sport to lend to the sport. I see and hear a lot of Phil Jackson, more new agey, more baseball-y, but I hear a lot of it in Joe Maddon. Do you?
Yeah, definitely. I think the way that Joe was able to cultivate relationships away from the field and just encourage you to get away, I think it was something that is kind of overlooked with how important that is to get away from the game. Basketball, you know, I think they play 82 games, and it's a long, long season. It's a very long playoffs for them. And for us, 162 games with no off days, to make sure that you carve out time to get away from baseball is very important because it'll just run you down. And when you play, I think in 2018 it was, we played 43 straight games without an off day. So having that time and making sure that you're saying, all right, look, I'm going to set away an hour or 2 hours today to read, to meditate, to whatever it is to get me away from baseball, to make sure that I'm mentally focused when I come back, because you can burn yourself out very quickly. And that was one thing that Joe was very, very good at.
So as we look at the rules as they've been laid out, at least the health and safety plan that is whatever it was, 70 pages, and I couldn't believe how specific it was about where you can stand and what's encouraged and what's discouraged and when you could be in a cage or not be in a cage. Is this tenable? Is this something where baseball can, coming back like this, can this be enough like baseball by these stringent health rules they've laid out?
Yeah, I think that to start, it's going to have to be that way. I think it covers all of our bases to make sure that guys feel comfortable that we're taking every possible precaution. As restrictions are lifted and as things become a little bit better, I think some of these rules can be relaxed. I do think there's some things in there that we'll have to take a look at just for player preparation, because it's important that we're not taking away from the product on the field. And health and safety extends beyond the virus and what we're talking about in that sense, and to players' health and safety on the field, because you don't want to take away from what guys use for preparation and then get them hurt on the field. So we're trying to balance both of those things. We're trying to make sure that the proposal not only addresses the coronavirus and COVID concerns, but also health and safety on the field of the players. So I think that it being as strict as it is a good starting point. And then we can always move from there and determine which of those things we can relax on as I think the entire global perspective kind of loosens up a little bit.
Ian, before we let you go, let us know again about coffeeforcovid.com.
Yeah, the first, I guess, week and a half now has been great. The support from people, first bags were received over the weekend, and then starting this week, people are getting them. So to hear the reviews, all the positivity that people are bringing to this, really exciting. We're starting to get reorders as well. So it's coffeeforcovid.com. $3 from every bag is going to help COVID relief, and we're going to start announcing our two charitable partners coming at the end of this week, early next week. So we're super excited for that, and you'll kind of get a feel for exactly where that money is going and who we're helping. And so thank you, everyone, for all the support. Like I said, coffeeforcovid.com to go order that quarantine coffee.
Ian, great stuff. Look forward to talking next week. Here's to more good health and maybe baseball on the horizon if some people can look out for their own best interests and start getting some things done.
Yes, sir. We're going to do our best and try to bring baseball back to Chicago soon.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you.
That is Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs. He and Zach Short and Dakota Mekas and Nico Horner are holed up at the compound in Arizona waiting for baseball to start. We are going to talk some hockey when we come back in just a moment because there are reports of the NHL's playoff plan. So ask yourself this. Do you think the Blackhawks are a playoff team? Because there's a definitive answer to that when we come back. And also, I've got some information on what is happening at least with one Chicago rink and the return of summer hockey for high school and what they're going to have to do, what new regulations are in place to try to make this happen. And maybe it can be a model for your rink as well, depending on where you play and pursuant to whatever local regional laws may be in effect. Got all that info. Talk more hockey. We'll do that next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
But hey, as they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Yeah, let's do that hockey. This segment brought to you by DuckDuckGo Privacy. Want the same internet but more privacy? DuckDuckGo's got you covered. They help millions of people like you get privacy online without any trade-offs with one download. You can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers, all for free. DuckDuckGo Privacy Simplified. Well, there's been a report now. Sportsnet hockey insider Elliot Friedman yesterday has said what's long been rumored, and I should mention that our own Jay Zawoski mentioned this a while back, that he was hearing something similar. A 24-team conference-based playoff format that would, they hope, take place this summer if and when the league returns to action. So there would be eight teams earning an automatic spot in the 16-team playoff. There's a play-in round is what they would be starting it with, I guess. And the play-in round would be a bracketed format, meaning the 5 takes on the 12 for the chance to play the 4, 6 against the 11 for the chance to play the 3, etc. And as we look at the playoff format in both conferences right now, in the Western Conference, yes, indeed, your Chicago Blackhawks would be the 12 seed in the playoffs. They would be a playoff team taking on the fifth-seeded Edmonton Oilers. So you have the top group that's already in. If top six are in, and then 7 through 12 kind of play it out. The play-in round is a best of 5, and the rest of the playoffs are a best of 7. The proposal hasn't been finalized, and they haven't even started with testing protocols and hub cities and visas for the international players as well. The NHLPA's executive board of directors is supposed to have a conference call on Thursday to discuss it. So this is all developing. But as of what is being floated at the moment, the Chicago Blackhawks would be, by this proposal, would be a playoff team. So closer to home, we actually got a very exciting note the other day when Coach called and said, summer hockey for now is on. And we thought, wait, what? Summer hockey is on? He said, yeah, we've got some special rules. And I'm not sure if this is all across AHI, the Amateur Hockey Association of Illinois, or if this is rink by rink how this is being done. But it does seem really well thought through. And I mentioned before that when you think about hockey and the level of protection that's already there, the fact that very little is shared, you're not even touching a ball, you have gloves on your hands the whole time, and skaters could wear full plastic face shields if required. But I'm just going to share with you, and I don't know if you have a youth hockey player or a high school hockey player or how some of this might be done on your end. And I know Illinois is probably different from Indiana. In our high school league, a lot of the teams that we play are based in Indiana, so it might be different. But I will tell you what this particular rink is doing. We've got a main rink. It's one sheet, but it's going to be divided for us into rink A and rink B, half sheets, with a 6-foot no man's land between the two for skills sessions. Each rink has a separate entrance to the building. Each rink, this is the half rink here, each one will have a maximum of 9 skaters and 1 coach per session. The temperature of every person entering the building is taken upon arrival. No player or adult is allowed if they show a fever, and obviously encouraged to stay home if sick or showing any symptoms. Some of this is obvious. No sharing of water bottles of any kind. It'll be strictly enforced. All individual bottles have to be clearly labeled. Players arrive at the rink no earlier than 15 minutes before start time, fully dressed, with the exception of skates, gloves, helmets, which are to be put on in the locker room with proper social distancing enforced. Upon completion of the skate, each player and parent, who may be a parent assistant coach if parent is coaching, would remove only skates, helmet, and gloves and exit the building immediately. The exception is for goalies. Oh, thank God. The goalies will have space to put on their gear at the rink using social distance. And parents are only allowed in upon special pre-approval, which sucks because I love watching practice, and I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. So the rink is being deep cleaned, high wear areas repainted. There will be continued deep cleaning and sanitizing of common areas, high touch areas, and hard surfaces. There's regular shift sanitization of high touch areas around the facility, including the use of portable sanitizer sprayers. So this has all been really well thought out. And you know, obviously, we talk about it and thinking, you know, can this be done? And it sounds like once June begins, and once, if people are going to be dining al fresco, if there are going to be groups of 10 allowed, that this sounds like it's probably okay. This sounds like it's going to be okay. And if we can get our high schoolers back out there and back playing, what it's just going to mean for them to be around each other, for them, for teams to be back together, it's going to be pretty special. We also were thinking, too, in January, I don't know about you, in January, our team had a horrible, we called it flu that was going through the team, and a bunch of people caught it, and coach caught it, and it took like a week and a half, and kids were out of school and really laid up, and interesting, had low fever and dry cough, et cetera, and it passed, and a bunch of people got, probably half the team got sick, and in hindsight, everybody's been wondering, gee, what might that have been? So I don't know, when they'd start doing tracing and start doing antibodies and start doing testing, it would be interesting to know if that was something in late January that might have been something other than what we thought it was. But, oh, and thank you, 708. This wouldn't be a proper segment if somebody didn't text in, stop talking hockey! Okay, I will. Because, coming up next, we're going to talk to a crazy person. Did you see what Paul Sullivan, the pictures that he put online, the story that he put in the Tribune, he's been going through his sports junk. This man has saved the strangest things from his entire career as a sports writer. And I thought this was fake, and it's not. It's real. So we may have to do an intervention. I think something could be wrong with Paul Sullivan, but this is just awesome. He's going to be our 1140 friend today, coming up next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I think it's time that we provide a score intervention for someone here, because this is really awesome. With every next item, I saw Paul Sullivan list from his cluttered museum of sports junk. I'm more and more amazed and perhaps a bit concerned. Paul Sullivan of the Tribune is on Twitter at PW Sullivan. He's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Is this real, dude? Seriously? This is legit?
What, you think I would make this up?
I don't know. I mean, just like, who thinks to save all these things?
It's not that I, you know, it was in my head, oh, I'm going to save this and this and this. You just find stuff in drawers and you just don't. I mean, how are you going to throw out Milton Bradley bubblegum cigar? How are you going to throw out a pacifier that Big Z gave you? A cocktail napkin from Red Curve? I mean, it's just stuff that, I don't know, you just, oh, yeah, that's cool. And then you put it in a drawer or a box and then forget about it. And there was an intervention. I'm glad you did it.
I wouldn't throw out any of this. I mean, this is gold.
Damn.
I mean, you couldn't. This is amazing. A Tiger Stadium railing, Dusty Baker's toothpick box, Shea Stadium turf. You have an Irving Fryer voodoo doll, an Albert Bell signed candy bar wrapper, literal falling concrete. Oh, it's not signed. It's fake signed.
No.
Okay. But there's literally a chunk of falling concrete from Wrigley Field that looks like it could be a meteorite. I mean, this is phenomenal. This is gold.
Is it gold or is it junk?
It's both. It's both, but you could do a traveling Paul Sullivan, like, ridiculous circus museum kind of thing.
That's a good idea. Maybe I'll do that. Honestly, it was my boss's idea to do this because I was Amanda Kashubi. I was looking through boxes. You know, we're all looking for content about the Michael Jordan documentary, and I found the Johnny Red Kerr napkin, and if you haven't read the story, it was a cocktail napkin with four tombstones that he drew on it, and it had the names of people, and it had a date, and it says Red Kerr's drawing of Cartwright elbow victims, and I couldn't remember what it was, so I had to go through the Tribune archives and found out that I had covered the game in Houston when Cartwright elbowed Hakeem in the face and put him out for a while. And so this was, we'd gone to a bar after the game and he wrote names of Cartwright's elbow victims and wrote them on tombstones. And for some reason I saved it. So that led me to go look for other stuff in drawers and closets, et cetera.
And what people should know is that Dusty Baker technically was not chewing toothpicks. Technically, these were tea tree Australian chewing sticks, birchwood impregnated with tea tree oil and other natural extracts. How did you end up with this empty box?
I think I did a story on it. I couldn't find that one in the archives, but I do remember during Dusty's first year when the Dusty We Trusty was, you know, still a thing and everyone loved him. I did a thing. I don't know why, you know, why he was chewing the toothpicks. And then he showed me the toothpick box and he said he had them, like, I don't know if they were imported or what, but, you know, they weren't really toothpicks so much as you said, they were Australian trees or little carvings of trees or something. And, you know, I just, like everything else, threw it in a box and put it in a drawer and there it was.
And what's behind your desire to literally grab pieces of stadia? You chipped a piece of paint off a dugout wall of Yankee Stadium as a memento.
Yeah.
You also have a railing from Tiger Stadium and the Shea Stadium turf. That's actual baseball nostalgia. There's something going on with that isn't just, oh, I happen to have this.
No, those were the Yankee Stadium was somewhere near the end of Yankee Stadium, and I wanted to have a reminder of Yankee Stadium because I love that place. And same with Tiger Stadium. I don't know how I got a whole, like a 4-foot piece of railing out of there, out of the press box, but I did, and I had it smuggled back to the to Chicago on a, on the team flight, and picked it up. And that the AstroTurf from the Mets dugout, I specifically that was coming off, and I just took it to kind of as a joke to show to Ron Santo, asking if he wanted it, and I don't want that, and you know, so that was what that was all about. So there's a story behind all of them. Unfortunately, most of them are so long ago, I don't remember a whole lot of it.
Well, you remembered Carlos Zambrano giving you a baby's pacifier that was apparently yes. given to him by a teammate who was indicating he thought that Carlos might be a big baby.
Yes, that was actually, I did go through the archives and found that story. I did write about Carlos because it was just sitting there in his locker, and we were all in spring training at Fitch Park, and you know, at the end of the interview, I'm like, what's that? And, Tomas Perez gave it to me. It's not for me. I don't know why he did that. So then I guess he figured I was just saying it just out of my own curiosity. And then when I wrote a story about it, he got upset, and, you know, ran across the clubhouse the next day. Here, this is you need this more than me. No, okay. And that's how I got that.
You mentioned a bubblegum cigar from Milton Bradley. Describe yes. what that is.
When Milton came to the Cubs in 2009, he really made a concerted effort to get along with the writers at the start. And he had a baby in spring training. Handed out bubblegum cigars to his teammates. You know, it's a boy. And I don't know if he had leftovers or whatever, but he gave it to all the writers, too. And so, you know, once again, threw in a bag, wound up in a drawer. And then, obviously, things deteriorated with Milton, and not only with me, but with all the writers. And didn't even last the whole season, as I recall. And I also had some batting gloves that someone gave me of his. I think it was from his last day when he was basically kicked off the team for he had some interview with Bruce Miles of the Herald where he was just ripping the organization, and Henry said, that's enough, you're gone. And somebody gave me those.
I have to tell you, the Irving Fryer voodoo doll is the stuff that nightmares are made of. Did it look like that when you bought it, or has it deteriorated over time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wasn't a writer then. I mean, I was a writer, but I was working for Mike Royko then, so I wasn't a sports writer. And I just happened to go to the Super Bowl in New Orleans because my dad has season tickets, and he won the lottery where you get Super Bowl tickets. So I went with a friend, and we were in the House of Voodoo. They had Bears voodoo dolls and Patriots voodoo dolls, you know, representing different players that you wanted to curse. And at the time, Irving Fryer was a big star on the Patriots. And so I bought the Irving Fryer, and so that was like 86 was the Super Bowl. So, yeah, that survived quite a few moves, quite a few apartment moves since then.
I loved watching you and Mark Potash go back and forth with your stuff on Twitter, watching a couple of veteran sports writers having sort of a here's what I've saved contest. Do you save things in general? Are you like my mother in that if it's a perfectly good piece of cardboard, there's no reason to throw it out? Or safety pins. There was a drawer in my house where, you know, takeout chopsticks. I'm this way because I'm my mother's son in that regard, where it's like, oh, this bungee cord that came on this gift box, I could use this for something. Or if it's like I say, rubber bands from the green onions, maybe I'll keep a couple of rubber bands from that, just because that's sort of my nature, because it was the house I grew up in. Do you come by this honestly?
Yeah, I think it was handed down. I don't go that far, like saving rubber bands or stuff like that. But I do have, you know, a ton of letters. My grandmother, I don't know if you've heard that story, worked for Comiskey. She was his secretary back in the, you know, 1920s and stuff. So I have letters sent to her from like Eddie Collins and, you know, addressed to her at Comiskey Park. And I have letters from like what Reinsdorf used to, I don't know if he still does this, but he would, when he saw something in the papers that he didn't like or that was, he thought was wrong, he would, you know, take a Xerox of the article, and with a red pen, he'd, you know, circle whatever was wrong. And then he'd write a letter saying, you know, this is nonsense. So I have a few letters from him, and I know a lot of other writers that have stuff from him. So mostly the stuff I save is, except for, you know, the junk that I'm talking about in this article, most of it is, you know, letters, programs. Yeah, I mean, Potsy, he's got some very valuable stuff. He's a avid collector of newspapers and programs and baseballs, and most of my stuff is basically, as I showed today, just junk.
You know, somewhere Les Grobstein is saying, well, I have a storage unit filled with media guides. You guys are both pikers, right?
Yes, exactly. And Bob Rosenberg, too, the Bulls scorer and former White Sox and Cubs scorekeeper. He, I did an article on him back in the 80s. He has an unbelievable number of media guides and programs. And honestly, I learned from Jerome Holtzman to save stuff, because he had a big house in Evanston where he had a huge library, you know, every book known to mankind that was ever written about baseball. And he had file cabinets that I looked through that, you know, he would have like a whole file cabinet full of beanball articles, greatest beanball incidents of all time. He was prodigious saver of, you know, old sporting news or whatever it was. So, you know, he basically taught me that, I mean, this was in the 80s. So it was before the internet. And if you didn't have that stuff, you know, if you wanted to go research something on beanballs, that was all you had. But of course, now you can pretty much Google anything.
You know, I was just reading this last week. When you're driving down Addison to go see a Cub game, on the south side of the street, just before you get to the ballpark, is that old yellowed, tilted building called Yesterday, a single-story building. And the proprietor, longtime proprietor, recently passed away. And I had, you know, wandered through there every so often, and it was literally falling apart. The building was barely standing up, and it appears that, according to reports, that nostalgia shop is now going to be replaced by a new three-flat, not surprisingly, considering the value of the land. But maybe there's opportunity in this. I'm picturing, you know, when all is said and done, you and Potsy together can sit behind the counter on those stools, and just, there's your retirement, and you pool your stuff, and maybe Grobber, and you can kind of like grow old together and just, you know, be there, and you send out to Byron's for a hot dog every once in a while, and you peddle your wares.
Well, why wait? I mean, my furlough's starting in a couple weeks. I can just do it then. You know?
sorry, I didn't mean to hit too close to home. I didn't mean to cut quite to the bone like that.
Yeah, it's a good idea, Dan. I'll talk to the owners and see what we can do. No, I mean, I'm dumping media guy. I am cleaning. Seriously, I am cleaning out my storage unit because there was a flood during the polar vortex, broke some pipes last year, and so I lost a lot of old, you know, Bulls. I covered the first two Bulls championships, and I lost a lot of stuff from that. So I am getting rid of stuff, old media guides. So if anyone, you know, lives near me and wants to go through the dumpsters, probably a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, Grobstein's online too. Anyway, Sully, it was fun stuff. It was really
intervention, Dan.
We'll keep looking out for you. Good health to you, my man.
All right, you too.
That is Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune, a sui generis character in his own right. Thanks to our guest today. Also joining Sully were Will Leach, Matthew Trueblood, Pete Futek, and Ian Happ. Great, as always. We're going to have some fun tomorrow because it's the Friday before Memorial Day. We think you might be firing up a grill or two. We are going to do, with Shane Reardon sitting in as executive producer, Jay Zawoski is going to take an extended four-day weekend for himself. So we are going to do SML Shane's Meat Live. It can be whatever you want it to be, and we are going to do it tomorrow at 11 o'clock, along with a slew of other things. We've got a lot of irons in the fire to go in a lot of different directions, so we can't wait for that. Thanks to Jay Zawoski, thanks to Ray Diaz, and thanks to you for listening and for hanging out. Looking forward to doing it again tomorrow. Keep washing your hands. Keep practicing social distance. Try to stay away from people if you have to be inside around people. Have the courtesy of wearing a mask over your nose and mouth. It's not necessarily for you. It's for others, and it's okay to think about other people. Listen to doctors, and only listen to people who listen to doctors. Lawrence Holmes is straight ahead. I will be back at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Goodbye.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.